സംസാര സാഗരേ മഗ്നം ദീനം മാം കരുണാനിധേ കർമ്മം ഗ്രാഹ്യ ഗൃഹീതാംഗം മാം ഉദ്ധര ഭവാർണവാൻ ശ്രീമൽഭാഗവദാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷ കൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാ നാഥ മുക്ത്യർത്ഥം ഭവ സാഗരേ ഭവേ ഭവേ യഥാ ഭക്തി പാദയോർസ്തവ ജായതേ തദാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോ യദ പ്രഭോ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവഭാവ പ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമനം തം നമാമി ഹരിം പരം ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യതോന്വയാ ദ്വിതരതസ് ചാർത്തേഷ്വഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാൻ തേനേ ബ്രഹ്മ ഹൃദയ ആദിഗവയേ മുഹ്യന്തി സൂരയ തേജോ വാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷാധാംനാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തകുഹകം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി ധർമ്മപ്രോജ്ജിത കൈതഗോത്രപരമോ നിർമത്സരാണാം സദാം വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമത്ര വസ്തുശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം ശ്രീമൽഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനികൃതേ കിംവാപരേ ഈശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യവരുദ്ധ്യതേത്ര കൃതിഭി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭിഃ തൽക്ഷണാൽ നിഗമകൽപതരോർഗളിതം ഫലം ശുകമുഖാദമൃതം ദ്രവസംയുതം പിബത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം മുഹുരഹോ രസിക ഭുവി ഭാവുകാഃ സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപത്യാദി ഹേതവേ താപത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നമാം യം പ്രവ്രജന്തം അനുഭേദം അപേദകൃത്യം ദ്വൈവായണോ വിരഹകാതരമജ്ജുഹാവ പുത്രേരി തന്മയതയത്തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിം ആനദോസ്മി യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖില ശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപം അതിദിദീർഷതാം തമാന്ധം സംസാരിണാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനം ഉപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ജൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയൽ കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കണവേണൂ കുനിദാദൃദാനനേന്ദോഹോ മമ വാചി വിജൃംഭതാംബുരാരേർ മധുരിം കണികാവി കവികാവി നമാം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിൻ ഇതി നാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവി ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യ ദേശധാരിണി ശ്രീമൽ ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ വന്ദേ നന്ദം വ്രജസ്ത്രീണാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ണശ വ്യാസം ഹരികഥോദ്ഗീതം പുനാധി ഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാണവേ നമാം പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിത ചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായം അതിസുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വാദാലയേശമനിശം പ്രതിഭാവയാമി ഓം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമഃ. Dho Maharaj's prayers to Krishna, and we have seen that these prayers in the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially after the prayers from Bhishma and Kunti Devi, how the prayers from Dhruva differs from them, basically in the sense that all devotees have their own special relationships with Krishna. And similarly, here you will notice that Dhruva Maharaj also had a special relationship with Krishna. As the way he saw Krishna, that is what comes through his prayers. That Dhruva Maharaj, a 5-year-old boy, who went to the forest searching for Krishna, and on instruction from Sri Narada Muni, he chanted the mantra Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. But more than anything else, it was the mercy of Sri Narada Muni, who was actually inspired to help Dhruva Maharaj, knowing very well that Dhruva Maharaj was exactly in the same situation like Sri Narada Muni was in his own childhood. So that's what is very interesting to notice there. So Sri Narada Muni decided to help Dhruva Maharaj, and Dhruva Maharaj started offering these prayers to Krishna. Krishna appeared there in eight-handed form, and while Krishna appeared, while Krishna appeared in front of Dhruva Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj did not know what to do at that point in time, because suddenly when the Vahirastam Dadarsha, that is how in the Bhagavatam it says, what he was seeing inside suddenly disappeared, what was inside. And externally, outside, he has started seeing Krishna. Immediately as he opened his eyes, he saw Krishna standing there in this form, eight-handed form. When he saw that, he did not know how to offer his prayers, nor did he know what to say to Krishna. You can imagine a five-year-old boy seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead in front of him. And he was totally confused, although in the heat of his emotions with his stepmother Suruchi, and the argument he had with her, he was so determined to come to the forest and to perform all the austerities and penances, and he was so determined to do all that. But when Krishna appeared in front of him, Dhruva Maharaj was not aware what else to do now. He was in a confused state of mind, the little boy Dhruva. So knowing very well that Dhruva Maharaj is a bit confused and not knowing what to say, Krishna decided that he will give that understanding to Dhruva Maharaj properly to glorify him. And that is what we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Kapola deshe samsprishtavanasitarena tathadarena. That is how it's mentioned. Kapola deshe, in the forehead, Krishna touched his the conch shell, with the result was samsprishtavanasitarena tathadarena. That automatically the vaikari potency inside woke up. And when he woke up, immediately he had no problem. Everything was clear. That Srila Prabhupada explains in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the fourth canto, that real knowledge wakes up in one's heart when Krishna actually gives that knowledge to him. Otherwise, everything is considered to be ignorance. All what we experience in this material world and our research and all other activities to understand the truth behind, the reality behind, will not be ultimately successful, because unless Krishna has given us that clearance to enter into the zone of knowledge, we will never become knowledgeable, or we will not get the understanding of the absolute truth. And that is what is this example so shows also. Kapovala deshe samsprishtavanasi darena tada darena. That is how it's mentioned. So Dhruva Maharaj, after he was blessed by Krishna's conch shell, Dhruva Maharaj immediately became powerful to glorify Krishna. And that is why the 12 verses in the 9th chapter of the 4th canto, where it begins Dhruva Maharaj's prayers to Krishna, there is 12 verses in there, starting from the 5th to 17th. And if you read those 12 verses, Sridharajaja Swamiji says about these verses, they are known as Dvadasha Adityas. Dvadasha Adityas means that in the sun planet actually has representatives there, that the 12 months represented by, and this Dvadasha Adityas comes in the 12th canto later. So Sridharajaja Swamiji compares them to Dvadasha Adityas, the 12 Adityas, or the 12 sun planet, 12 predominating deities there. Now, in the Vrindavanam also, you will notice there is a place called Dvadasha Aditya Kila. That is the place where Sanatana Goswami built the Radha Madan Mohan temple. And Krishna, after killing Kaliya, he showed that he felt tired, and he took some rest on this hill. And the 12 Adityas came and circumambulated him, paying their obeisances to Krishna. And they tried to give a little bit more happiness to Krishna by being present there. And because of that, that place is came to known as Dvadasha Aditya Kila. Sanatana Goswami built Sri Radha Madan Mohan temple in that place. And that is how Dvadasha Adityas comes in the Srimad Bhagavatam also. So this Sridharacharya Swamiji, while comparing these 12 verses, he is compared to known as these Dwadashaditya. He says there in his commentary. So in the first verse itself, Yonga Pravishyam Mama Vajamimam Prasuptam, that suddenly Dhruva Maharaj recognized that Krishna has come inside me and he has given me the right understanding. The knowledge has woken up inside. Samjit Akhilagara Shaktidhamnam, that all the Akhilagara Shakti, that Krishna's strength is, Krishna is the complete controller of all the energies in this world. We call it different energies. What we see in the material world, the different kind of energies, what we experience or what we utilize for our own living in this world is actually controlled by Krishna. But this energy is unknown to us, the controller behind the energy. We only see Krishna's energy in this world. But the energetic or the personality behind the energy is not known to us. We think everything has been kept there for us to come and exploit it as much as we like. But that is not the case. A person who has realized Krishna, he sees that behind this energy there is the personality of Godhead, Supreme Personality, Krishna behind it, who provides all this energy. And therefore, Agila Shakti Sudhanyam, Anyamsham, Hastajaranam, Shravanam Shagadin Pranam Namo, Bhagavade Purushaya Tubhyam. That Dhruva Maharaj had to say this to Krishna, that as soon as you have given me this strength, from my inside, I have started seeing things a lot more clearer. Because all the energy that keeps this body functioning in different ways, the mind, the intelligence, the senses, the food what we eat, how it gets digested, in everything there is Krishna's presence there. Unfortunately, because we don't understand it, we are in a such a gross level, our conceptions are, we don't think that Krishna has anything to do with it. We think we are totally independent of Krishna. But according to the realized personalities like Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, if you see all their prayers, you will find this statement again and again coming back. Prananamo Bhagavade Purushaya Tubhyam. That pranam, the energy inside, the strength, what is making all these things to happen inside is Krishna. It is Krishna's potency that is working. And this is what is known as realization. That Dhruva Maharaj, when he came to that platform of understanding, that Krishna is behind everything that happens. Dhruva Maharaj asked Krishna one very interesting question. A person who has given me all these things and made me allow my body to function like this, what else should I do except to pay my obeisances to him? This is what Dhruva Maharaj asked him. Yonda Pravishyam, that when all these things which are inside, deposited there, they were already there, but they could not function. In the third canto, you have seen before, that when all the material, five material elements, they combined together, they could not function. When did they function? Saridal Udadishtadam. When Krishna entered into that, it got the strength to perform, function. Otherwise it has no function. Material elements are dead matter. They have no energy to function its own. So similarly, in the Srimad Bhagavatam also, you will see that Dhruva Maharaj's prayers are significant from this point of view, that every time in these 12 verses, Dhruva Maharaj explained to Krishna that how he experienced Krishna, how he realized Krishna through his energies in his own body, how Krishna entered into his body and energized everything, and everything started functioning in its own, in a normal way. And therefore, these prayers from Dhruva Maharaj is so significant that we will read those prayers and the 12 verses and their translations, so that we can appreciate what Dhruva Maharaj was saying to Krishna. Shri Dhruva Vacha Yonda Pravishya Mama Vacha Mimam Prasuttam Sanjeevayachagilashaktidhara swadhanam Anyam shahastajaranas shravanatvagadim Pranannamo bhagavade purushaya dubhyam. Translation. Dhruva Maharaj said, my dear Lord, you are all powerful. After entering within me, you have enlivened all my sleeping senses. My hands, legs, ears, touch sensation, life force, and especially my power of speech. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you. This is the verse 6 in chapter 9 of Canto 4.
Thank you.
Next, 6-7. Egastun egabhaga eva bhagavanidam alpashakya mayakheyorigunaya mahada vyashesham srishtvanu vishyapurushat tadasangunesho naneva darusho vibhavasvaran vibhasin. My Lord, you are the Supreme One, but by your different energies, you appear differently in the spiritual and material worlds. You create the total energy of the material world by your external potency, and after creation, you enter within the material world as the Super Soul. You are the Supreme Person, and through the temporary modes of material nature, you create varieties of manifestation, just as fire entering into wood of different shapes burns brilliantly in different varieties. Tuddataya vainayena mayashta vishvam supta prabuddha ivanadhaval pravannaha tasyava varga sharanam tadavada mulam vishra vismaryade kradavida kathamartha bandhom. O my Master, Lord Brahma is fully surrendered unto you. In the beginning you gave him knowledge, and thus he could see and understand the entire universe. Just as a person awakens from sleep and visualizes his immediate duties. You are the only shelter of all persons who desire liberation, and you are the friend of all who are distressed. How therefore can a learned person who has perfect knowledge ever forget you? Nunam vimushtamadayas tava mayayateyetum bhavapaya vimokshanamanyahedom archandi kalpagadarum kunabhobhavogyam ichandiyal sparshajam nirayedinam. Persons who worship you simply for the sense gratification of the bag of this bag of skin are certainly influenced by your illusory energy. In spite of having you, who are like a desire tree and are the cause of liberation from birth and death, foolish persons such as me desire benediction from you for sense gratification, which is available even for those who live in hellish conditions. Yāna vradistana pradam tava bāda vatma dhyānān bhavajjana gathā śravanena vāsyāl sā brahmani sumahimān abhinādhamā bhul kim tvām anda kim tvām dakāśililidān padadām vimānāl. My Lord, the transcendental bliss derived from meditating upon your lotus feet or hearing about your glories from pure devotees is so unlimited that it is far beyond the stage of Brahmanandam, where one thinks himself merged in impersonal Brahman as one with the Supreme. Since Brahmananda is also defeated by the transcendental bliss derived from devotional service, then what to speak of the temporary blissfulness of elevating oneself to the heavenly planets, which is ended by the separating sword of time. Although one may be elevated to the heavenly planets, he falls down in due course of time. Bhaktim mohu pravahadam tvai me prasango bhuya dananda mahadam amalashayanam yena anjasolpanam uruvyasanam bhavabdhim neshe bhavad gunakatha amrada panamatta. Brahma Maharaj continued, O unlimited Lord, kindly bless me so that I may associate with great devotees who engage in your transcendental loving service constantly, as the waves of a river constantly flow. Such transcendental devotees are completely situated in an uncontaminated state of life. By the process of devotional service, I shall surely be able to cross the nishin ocean of material existence, which is filled with the waves of blazing, fire-like dangers. It will be very easy for me, for I am becoming mad to hear about your transcendental qualities and pastimes, which are eternally existent. Tena smarandi madidaram priyamisham artyam ye janmadam sudasuhram grahavitta dharaha etvam janada bhavadiya padara vindam saugandhya labdha dayesha kruda prasanga. O Lord, who have a lotus navel, if a person happens to associate with a devotee whose heart always hankers after a lotus feet, seeking always their fragrance, he is never attached to the material body, or in a bodily relationship to offspring, friends, home, wealth and wife, which are very, very dear to materialistic persons. Indeed, he does not care for them. Yubam Savishtam Ajade Mahadanyanegam Nadam Param Paramave Ninayatravada. My dear Lord, O Supreme and God, I know that the different varieties of living entities, such as animals, trees, birds, reptiles, demigods and human beings, are spread throughout the universe, which is caused by the total material energy. And I know that they are sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest. But I have never experienced the Supreme Form I behold as I see you now. Now all kinds of methods of theorizing have come to an end. And that is the most interesting statement. All kinds of methods of theorizing have come to an end. So, kalpa-andam-edad-akhilam jahayana-grahna-anshede puman-sudra-ganam-da-shakastadangem yannabhi-sindhuruha-kanchana-loga-padma-garbhe-dhyuman-bhagavade-paramosmi-tasmayim. My dear Lord, at the end of each millennium, the Supreme Personality Godhead, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, dissolves everything manifested within the universe into his belly. He lies down on the lap of Sheshanaga. From his navel sprouts a golden lotus flower on a stem, and on that lotus, Lord Brahma is created. I can understand that you are the Supreme, same Supreme Godhead. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Tum nityamukta parishuddha vibuddha mahatma kodastham adhipurusho bhagavam tradisham yad buddhyavastinam akhandidaya sudrishtya drishtva astilau adhimaho vidirigam astem. My dear Lord, by your unbroken transcendental glance, you are the Supreme Witness of all stages. Supreme Witness of all stages of intellectual activities. You are eternally liberated. Your existence is situated in pure goodness. And your existence in super soul without change. You are the original personality of Godhead, full with six opulences. And you are eternally the master of the three modes of material nature. Thus you are always different from the ordinary living entities. As Lord Vishnu, you maintain all the affairs of the entire universe. And yet, you stand aloof and are the enjoyer of the results of all sacrifices. Yes, when viruddhagadayo hanisham badandi vidyadayo vividashaktayam anupuribhyad tad brahma vishwabhavam egamananda madhyam ananda matram avigaram aham prabadhyem. My dear Lord, in your impersonal manifestation of Brahman, there are always two opposing elements, knowledge and ignorance. Your multi-energies are continuously manifest, but the impersonal Brahman, which is undivided, original, changeless, unlimited and blissful, is the cause of the material manifestation. Because you are the same impersonal Brahman, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. And he concludes the prayers with the next verse. Satya Ashisho Hi Bhagavam Tava Bhada Bhattam Ashis Tathani Bhajada Purushartha Murte Api Eva Mari Bhagavan Paribhadi Dhinan Vashreva Valsagamanu Graha Kadar Osman. O Lord, O my Supreme Lord, you are the supreme personified form of all benediction. Therefore, one who abides in your devotional service with no other desire, worshipping your lotus feet is better than becoming king and lording it over a kingdom. That is the benediction of worshipping your lotus feet. To ignorant devotees like me, you are the causelessly merciful maintainer, just like a cow who takes care of the newly born calf by supplying milk and giving it protection from the attack. So, these are the 12 verses which Dhruva Maharaj used sung to glorify Krishna. Now you can see by listening to these verses, it cannot come from an ordinary boy of 5 years. 5-year-old boy cannot speak in these words. So where did this come from? It came from Krishna. Krishna gave that ability to Dhruva Maharaj to speak in this way. So that is the system that Srila Prabhupada explains in one of the purports there. That unless one gets the mercy from Krishna, even to glorify Krishna is difficult. That is the way all the great acharyas have continued their glorification of Krishna. Now, after Dhruva Maharaj has glorified Krishna, suddenly Krishna disappeared from the scene. Did not stay very long. He just gave Dhruva Maharaj a special mercy that 36,000 years you should rule this planet. And at the end of that 36,000 years, you can come back to me. Saying this, and Dhruva Maharaj was continuously observing Krishna. Krishna left the scene and went away. Now this may look a little bit strange why Krishna left that scene immediately. That Dhruva Maharaj has just seen Krishna. He hasn't had a lot of time. In the case of Narada Muni also same thing happened. Narada Muni, Krishna gave vision. Narada Muni saw Krishna in the hall. And for a few moments only he could see Krishna. And after that Krishna disappeared and told him, now you can see me in your next life. Till then there is no more further connections. You are not going to see me, but go ahead in this world, walk freely and continuously sing about me. There will be no problems. In the end you will come back to me. This is what Krishna told Sri Narada Muni. Exactly in the same way, Krishna also left Dhruva in that mood. But there is a reason why Krishna did that here. Because when Dhruva Maharaj came to perform these austerities and penances, his intention was not to go back to the spiritual world. As you will see before, that Brahmayas came there with one intention, that he wanted to be a king as powerful as Ukanapada, so that he could feel satisfaction that Suriji mother Suriji could not offend him anymore. So that desire was very strongly there in Dhruva's mind. And Krishna wanted that that desire should be fulfilled before he comes back into the spiritual world. So generally that is the way Krishna deals with the devotees. When Krishna wants to deal with a devotee, Krishna looks at the person's heart and see what amount of material desires are still there lying back in his heart. And if he comes back to the spiritual world with all these material desires, it will be probably a problem for Krishna himself there that we may create for him. So Krishna decides that you stay here as long as these desires are there and continuously fulfill all your desires. And one day, when you are totally fed up with all your material desires and you think that this is the time now I start seriously thinking about Krishna, Krishna says then you can come back. Up to that point, Krishna would like us to stay here and fulfill these desires. Because material desires, Kunti Devi said in your prayers to Krishna very clearly that Tatha Paramahamsanam Muninam Amalal Manam. Look at Kunti Devi's words, Amalal Manam, that whose Almanam, that means their mind, has no dirt in there, or there is no more desires in there, completely freed from all material desires. They are the people who go to Krishna. Yadha munina paramahamsanam muninam amalalpanam. Munis, great realized souls who are silent, who are thoughtful, such people go to Krishna. Paramahamsanam, who have reached the level of that level of purity in their heart, that they have no more material desires to fulfill. So for them, Krishna is very easily accessible. But for those who have a lot of material desires, Krishna is still accessible. Krishna fulfills their desires at some point in time. When Krishna finds that by giving that material opulence to that person, if he is not going to fall down, he will still remain in Krishna consciousness, Krishna offers that material opulence also. If not, Krishna waits till he is ready to accept that. Because if you sometimes, in the material world also, if you offer, it is a practical example to think about it. That sometimes renunciation is very, very difficult. Some sort of material comforts, what we have or what we have acquired in this material world. If one has to give up all the material comforts in one stroke, it becomes very hard. Life becomes so difficult. Similarly, if all the material opulence comes to you in one lot, then also it's very hard how to accept it. Because you can see in many instances, people get so much wealth by somehow or the other. Wealth comes to them and then they are confused. They don't know. You can see in the newspaper all the time this kind of situations developing with people. Then they do not know what to do. Somebody books holidays, do this, so many things they do, buy so many houses, buy as much whatever they can do, travel all around, buy houses for relatives, so many things they do. And still there is something missing there in life. And that they have not come to that point. But these kind of material opulences can satisfy a living entity only up to a certain degree. And unless one comes to that realization and understand that Krishna is much more valuable than all these things, Krishna consciousness is more valuable, then only up to that point Krishna keeps that person in material difficulties. And because this is the reason behind it, Krishna has no friendship or enmity towards anyone, all living entities. Sukhruda sarva bhudanam yatvamaham shanti mrachari. Bhagavad Gita Krishna says there. Sukhrutam sarva bhudanam. He is a friend of all the living entities. People have a misconception that if I take to Krishna consciousness, Krishna will take away all my wealth and make me a pauper. This feeling is very strong. In many people have this understanding. Krishna has no such plan to take away anybody's wealth. After all wealth belongs to Krishna. Why does he need our wealth from our hands? That is not Krishna's plan. That is our misunderstanding. We misunderstand like that. But when Krishna knows that somebody can handle that wealth, then Krishna gives him. When Sudama went to Krishna, Krishna saw Sudama, Krishna immediately understood this Brahmana can handle wealth because there was no attachment to any wealth. Whether there was wealth or no wealth, Sudama was always chanting the holy name that Krishna was his dearest friend. And he mentioned that also. But what does somebody ask to Sudama? That what do you want after leaving this Dwaraka when you go back to Sudama Puri to live in your palace? Sudama's answer was that yasevame sauhrada saukhya maitri dasyam janar janmani janmani syam, that life after life I want to be a Krishna servant. That was Sudama's attitude. I think he wasn't bothered what wealth Krishna has given him or whether wealth he has not given him. He didn't look at it. He didn't look see it that way. So such people, Krishna will offer them wealth also. So in different conditions, in different situations, Krishna reacts in different ways depending on the devotee's mind or depending on the devotee's nature. To some person, Krishna knows that giving him wealth could be a problem. For them, the Krishna does not offer them wealth. Krishna takes it away from them. Because sometimes people get too much wealth and then they get the pride develops inside and then they forget Krishna and go away. So in that instance, Krishna says that better you don't have too much wealth. Somebody else who is struggling very, very hard in this material world, thinking that how can I go on like this at one time or the other, I would like to go to the temple or visit the holy places or to associate with devotees and want to make my life a little bit more Krishna conscious. I'm working day and night like this, but I'm not getting an opportunity to associate with the devotees or go to the temple or to do something for Krishna. To such a person, Krishna gives them wealth. Now that you have that desire, let that be fulfilled. So Krishna reacts to different people in different ways. For someone who is very, very sick, he is thinking that because of this illness, I am not in a position to serve Krishna. My mind is not able to control. I am experiencing so much severe pain in my body, or my consciousness is in such a bad shape that I am not able to even chant the holy name. What shall I do? When a person comes to that state of mind, Krishna gives him help. Well, he gives him help. But on the other hand, sometimes you will also see some people who are so much proud of their health and always thinking themselves to be the controllers of this world. Suddenly Krishna catches them one day. Catches them by the leg and pulls him down. One whole side is gone, paralyzed, or something like that will happen. Or some serious illness happens to him. And then he starts lying in his bed. He starts thinking, now what shall I do? I have no hope, because consultants have already told me you've got only a few months' time left to leave this world. So when that notice comes to you, or when the notice comes to any one of us, immediately then we realize that there is no other shelter except Krishna. The realization will come at that point. So in order that, depending on the devotee's relationship with Krishna, or the state of mind, Krishna decides what is good for him. So in other words, what will help a person to become a devotee, that is what Krishna looks at. Not that Krishna takes away everybody's wealth and makes him proper. Then, if that is the case, often devotees, you might have heard saying that in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a verse which refers to this. Then often devotees will say this, that, oh, I have become pauper because I have taken Krishna's shelter. And Krishna, because he is pleased with me, that's why he has taken away all my money and made me to suffer or become poor like this. But that is not the right understanding of that, because that verse was spoken in a particular instance, in a particular situation. But generally, Sri Narada Muni has explained this in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, that Krishna knows what is good for a devotee. That sojanal dukha dukhidaha, that when one becomes too attached to material world and to material life, and sometimes too much attached to wealth and desire for acquiring wealth, Krishna puts a brake there. And then he says, no, you don't become successful anymore. Because if you become successful, then you will forget me. So best thing is that I don't offer you what you are looking for. So Krishna has different ways of dealing with devotees. Dhruva Maharaj also, as soon as this was spoken, Krishna left the scene. Krishna knew that Dhruva Maharaj came to him with this desire behind his mind, behind his heart. Although, after seeing Krishna, immediately Dhruva Maharaj forgotten all that. Like a boy's mind, you give him a nice toy, he'll play with it for some time, you offer him something different, he'll forget this whole thing, throw it away and go back to the new one. So Dhruva Maharaj was not different. He also immediately realized, Krishna is much more valuable than my 36,000 years life in this planet, ruling this planet. This realization came to Dhruva Maharaj. So Dhruva Maharaj started lamenting at that point. You can see in the Bhagavatam, it's mentioned there, that Dhruva Maharaj immediately understood, what a mistake I have made. I got something much more valuable, but what did I come here for? Asking him to become a king in this planet. A personality who owns millions and millions and trillions of planets in this whole creation. To him, I am asking him to become a king in this planet. Is there anything more foolish than what I have done? But now it is too late. The Supreme Lord has left. Krishna has already left. And Dhruva Maharaj, fully knowing this lamentation in his heart, he came back to the palace. Now, because Krishna has told him now, you have to stay 36,000 years in this planet, you have to rule the planet. That was Krishna's instruction. Now he has to abide by that. So he has come back to the kingdom. Now, when Dhruva Maharaj came back, the whole scene in the palace has changed. Uttarapada was lamenting, his father was lamenting for his son gone away like this. Sunidhi was heartbroken because she did not know what was going on. But in the meanwhile, one day, Sri Narada Muni came to the palace and told Sunidhi and Uttarapada that your son will come back glorious. He will come back because he will come back with a great success in his spiritual life. And exactly the same thing happened. So after Sri Narada Muni realized that Dhruva Maharaj had been given this mercy from Krishna, and at the same time Krishna also said to Dhruva Maharaj that Suruchi, who has spoken those harsh words, she will be punished. This is Krishna's words. And so Suruchi has to be punished. And because of this reason, Dhruva Maharaj came back to the palace. And when he came back, whom did he go first time to see? He didn't go to see his mother first. He didn't go to see his father first. He went to see Suruchi first. Why? That is the most interesting thing in this Dhruva Maharaj story. Because it is Suruchi who brought Krishna to him. If Suruchi has not spoken those harsh words to Dhruva, Dhruva would have never felt the desire to looking for Krishna in the forest. So Dhruva felt that if Suruchi has not done this favor to me, how would it have happened to me? I would have been still playing around with Uttama in the courtyard, playing some useless games. Rather, I have used my life on the right way because Suruchi created that desire. Although she spoke with a bad, evil intentions, it happened to be a blessing to me. In other words, I had this vision of Krishna and something I value so much because of Suruchi's mercy. And Dhruva Maharaj went and paid his obeisances to Suruchi first time. And Vidura was completely shocked to hear that when Dhruva Maharaj paid his obeisances to Suruchi, Suruchi put her hands on Dhruva Maharaj and told him that exactly opposite what she wished him before, saying to him that you should live forever. That is the way he put her hands on top of Dhruva Maharaj's head and given this blessing to Dhruva Maharaj. Vidura asked Maitreya Rishi at this point one question. How can this happen? Only a few 6 months ago, Suruchi sent her to the forest saying that pray to Krishna to get killed and then come back and ask Krishna to give a birth in my womb so that you can get into the lap of Uttarapada. And today the same Suruchi is putting her hands on Dhruva and saying to him that you should live forever. Because Krishna, there it says, Maitreya Rishi says, when one has pleased Krishna in this world, when one has pleased Krishna in this world, where is the question of enmity from another living entity? He asked this question to Vidura. From this, you can understand why we have so many enemies in this world. This is also a very interesting thing. When we have so many enemies in this world, it means only one thing, that Krishna is not pleased with us. That is why all these inimical relationships builds up in this world. Otherwise, with a little intelligence, we can understand that we came to this world at different times, at different places. And we live here such a short time. And one day, we all live at different times also, this world. But to create so much enmity in this world and to fight each against each other, there has to have some reason behind it. And the only reason Maitreya Rishi said to Vidura is this, that anybody who has received mercy from Krishna, there is no question of enmity from any another living entity to help him. This was the point Maitreya Rishi made very clear to Vidura at that time. And Dhruva Maharaj, who actually left the palace with this curse from Suruchi, Mother Suruchi, came back and being blessed by Suruchi at this time. It is after that, Dhruva Maharaj went to Uttarapada and Sunidhi, who gave him the right direction at the right time. He could not control his own emotions. Dhruva Maharaj fell at her feet and received her blessings also. As well as Uttarapada was immensely pleased by the arrival of Dhruva Maharaj. When Dhruva Maharaj came back, everyone in the palace were jubilant. Not only that, all the people in the kingdom, they also wanted that Dhruva Maharaj should take up the regime now. Why? Because Dhruva Maharaj has placed Krishna, he should be the next king. There was no doubt about it now. Suruchi couldn't say one word because Suruchi also felt that Dhrumaraj should become the next king. To such a degree, Krishna has changed their heart. That is the power of Krishna consciousness. That one who has pleased Krishna by his Krishna consciousness, there is no enemy for him anywhere, in any of this world, any of the creation, he has no enemy. And Dhrumaraj's life is pointing out that factor to us. So when this happened, immediately Uttanavada decided, now that Dhrumaraj is growing up, after a few years' time, he decided to install Dhruva as the king and wanted to leave home and go to the forest. And in the Bhagavatam it says there that Dhrumaraj took up the regime of the administration of the planet. Uttanavada went to the forest, performed the yoga system and went back to the spiritual world. Uttanavada's life was over. So Dhrumaraj takes up the administration. Dhruva's administration lasted 36,000 years. In the Bhagavatam it's mentioned very clearly. And during that time, in that administration time, Uttama was not interested, his brother was not interested in the administration. On the other hand, he was very fond of hunting. He was going to the forest and hunting animals. That was his great happiness. So Uttama was doing this, and when Uttama continued to do this, one day it so happened that Uttama never returned from the forest. So when he didn't return, for some time Suriji waited, looking for him to come back. But he never turned up. And at that time Suriji started thinking, I must go to the forest myself and find out what has happened. And Suriji went to the forest. After going to the forest and looking for him, couldn't find him anywhere. But by inquiries he found out that Uttama has been killed by the Yakshas. So Yakshas have killed him. And Suriji completely lost her mind due to her attachment to Uttama. And suddenly she saw a fire burning in the forest, and she decided to give up her body. So what did she do? She went up and she said, what's the point in me living now? My son, who was so dear to me, has gone. Why should I live? Decided like that, went and jumped into the fire and killed herself. This is what has happened. Now, this is also another interesting thing, because earlier Krishna said to Dhruva that I will be punishing Suriji, and this is what they call it as the punishment to Suriji. Why is it a punishment to Suriji? Because normally Krishna doesn't kill anybody directly. Krishna doesn't have to kill anyone. There is no need for that. Even if you read Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find that in many instances Krishna has not gone and killed anyone directly. Only very few cases. That means the demons who came to kill Krishna, Krishna has killed them. Even Pudana, who has killed so many children, and who was very cruel to children, who tried to poison Krishna, Krishna has killed her and sent her back to the spiritual world. Gave her the same position as Mother Yashoda. But look at Jarasandha. Jarasandha was a great devotee of Brahmana. He maintained so many Brahmanas, and except that he was not Krishna conscious, he was also a follower of Vedic culture. He followed Vedic culture very rigorously. He always looked after the Brahmanas and provided them their livelihood, everything. And to such a person, Krishna wouldn't kill him. In other words, he did not have the good fortune of getting killed by Krishna. From this, we have to understand that to get killed by Krishna is also, you require some qualification. Or in other words, even that is not easy to obtain, because Krishna's arrangement is such, both the survival potency and the killing potency, Krishna has kept within us. Krishna has arranged it like that. And that is what is known as in the Shastram as, they refer to as Vidya and Avidya, knowledge and ignorance, or Jnanam and Ajnanam, Vivegam or Avivegam, discrimination or lack of discrimination. This potency Krishna has kept within us. So what normally happens is, when Krishna is favorable, we will do things in the right way. So most of the times, if you feel that you are engaging your life in the proper way, or in the spiritual life, or Krishna conscious way, you can take it that Krishna is favorable from inside. That is why you are able to do that. Otherwise you won't be able to do that. Because Krishna has allowed you to do that, that you are able to think about Krishna, to read about Krishna, to hear about Krishna, to glorify Krishna. It's possible when Krishna is favorable inside. When Krishna is not favorable, that is not, is known as the avivegam or ajnanam or avidya, that the opposite side of this, which Krishna has kept inside, when that potency comes out, automatically you will act in the opposite way. Everything what you do will be out of ignorance, and you will do things which are not favorable for Krishna consciousness. You will do such things which will take you away from Krishna, and you engage in sinful activities. This is coming from that. So this special potencies, what Krishna has kept inside us, Krishna doesn't have to come personally to kill us. That potencies what has been kept inside will itself act at the right time and destroy us if it is necessary. And that is exactly what has happened in Suriji's case also. That at some point in time she started thinking, why should I live? Why should I live? If a thought starts developing in the heart in that way, what can be done? Sometimes people commit suicide. No, at that time, the mind is telling them that there is no point in living in this world. After all, distress comes in this world, some form or the other. Always there is some distress. That is the nature of the material world. You can't change that. Sometimes due to separation from a very close relative, or somebody whom one has loved too much, suddenly a separation happens in this world. And if one starts thinking that, oh, now everything is lost, I should give up my life. If one starts thinking like that, what can be done? So this is the time when Krishna consciousness opens up one's eyes and makes us realize that in these relationships have come to me after I come to this world. They were not there when I came here. And I will also go one day, and they also have to leave. That is an inevitable thing in this world, in the material world. So sometimes due to some circumstances like that, or due to in situations where sometimes some serious illness develops in the body, one starts deciding that what's the point in living like this. And he decides to give up his, terminate his body, and thinking that, oh, I'll escape from my reactions. But the laws of karma are powerful. They will not allow us to escape in any situation. So this is the way Krishna's potencies works in this, in our own consciousness. Guru Maharaj's prayers, you've seen how he acknowledged them, that everything is functioning in this material body only because Krishna is present there as a super soul. And he is allowing us to do certain things, and he is allowing us to understand also Krishna to some extent. Only when Krishna wants us to understand, we will understand Krishna. Otherwise, we are not going to understand Krishna. Our effort will come to a standstill at some point. So it is why Krishna's mercy becomes so important. Bandhusneham vijahyam tavahi garunaya. In the Ekadasha Skandam you will find this, that Krishna said to Uddhava that he should break these connections with this tondu sarvam parityaja sneham svajana bandhushu maya vesha manas samyak samadra vijara swagam. That is the whole Ekadasha Skandam is in one, the 11th canto is in one verse. Krishna told Uddhava, tondu sarvam parityaja. In the Bhagavad Gita also Krishna says, sarva dharman parityaja mamegam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva bhavibhyo mokshayishyami mahashuja. So that stage is only possible when Krishna allows us to do that. And this is why in the case of all the great devotees, they have acknowledged this fact to Krishna. When Krishna wants that to happen, it will happen. And therefore they will always say this to Krishna, that let whatever knowledge is required to develop that detachment, let that knowledge be there. Whatever renunciation is required, please give me that renunciation or detachment from this material world, because without Krishna's sanction, nothing will happen in this world. So knowing this very well, knowing Guru Maharaj's attitude, and knowing very well that Suriji had to be punished, Suriji was punished in this way. She was sent to the forest, and she had to jump in the forest and kill herself. That was her misfortune. This was the other side of Krishna's energy. That Krishna decided that Suriji should be killed and Suriji should die in this way, and she jumped into the fire and killed herself. Krishna didn't have to come and kill himself. Krishna didn't have to kill Suriji, but Suriji committed suicide, and that is Krishna's punishment. So anyway, after this, when Guru Maharaj came back, he was on a tour somewhere. When he came back, he heard about Uttama's departure and Suriji also getting killed. Guru Maharaj became very furious. He went to the forest straight away. And in addition to that, we have instances in the history before also, what we're talking about Suriji, Mother Suriji, that just like Dhruva Maharaj felt gratitude to Suriji for giving an opportunity to go back to Krishna, there are instances in the history in many devotees you will find that they have thanked Krishna for putting them into that situation. Vilamangalam said to Krishna that the very point that he was going to this lady with whom he had a relationship, And she told him one day that if you had the same devotion what you have towards me, towards Krishna, how glorious the life will be. And therefore, what did Vilumangalam do? When he wrote Krishna Ramanandam, first he glorified her. Because it was her mercy that turned his mind towards Krishna. Chindamanir Jayadi Somagirir Gurumim. That is how the verse begins in the Krishna Ramanandam. That Chindamani is nobody else than the girl whom he was having this relationship. Vilumangalam's relationship was with Chindamani. He used to call her affectionately Chindamani. So he thought that if Chindamani has not spoken to me to go to Krishna, I will never turn my mind towards Krishna. But the word when she spoke so powerful that it hit Vilumangalam, and he decided to go to Krishna. So naturally he felt a gratitude to Chindamani for directing him back to Krishna. Just like Dhruva Maharaj fell towards Suriji. Another great personality, he got very sick. And because he got so sick, he had to go to Krishna, he had no other option. He went to all the physicians, doctors, everything. Everyone said to him that your life is finished and nothing can be done about it. So eventually, we are also like that. When there is no hope, when all consultants have written us off, everybody has told there is no more hope in your life, then we come to Krishna. That's what we also do. We are also not much different than them. So this personality also did the same thing. He felt hopeless that he decided to go to Krishna. And he glorified Krishna. He took Srimad Bhagavatam in his hand and compiled one of his famous commentaries on the Bhagavatam. And when he compiled the Bhagavatam, Krishna had a long conversation with him. Now after everything was over, he said to Krishna that now that I am cured, on the 100th day when he finished Srimad Bhagavatam commentary, he got up from his seat and walked out and with full health. And not only full health, he was 27 when he had this illness. And he lived up to 86. And in that long period of time, not once he fell sick, nor he did he have to take anyone's help for his life in this world. So that person, when one day he came out of the temple, he was walking away. By now, he has acquired several power in him because of his serving Krishna. So he saw the illness what has caught him before, in his personified form was moving around. So he addressed to that disease and told him, and paid his obeisances to that disease personified. And he said to him, if you have not come and caught me at the right time, I would have been enjoying my life in this world in somewhere else. But what a good fortune, what a great favor you have done to me. And he wrote this commentary, he mentioned this. Hey Rogaha, oh my dear's illness, he says, addressing him, the person, he says, Hey Rogaha, Nadu Sukhadame Vayuyam Hi. That, what a good friend you are. That if you have not caught me at that time, the way you caught me, I would have never turned my mind towards Krishna. I would have been sitting in some king's court and palaces and trying to argue with each other, trying to get some recognition from the king and to advance my life in this world. But That friendship you have extended to me by catching me at the right time and making me realize that I have to surrender to Krishna, you have done me a great favor. If not done, what would have happened then? I would have been going towards Yamaloka. This is what he said. In other words, now you can see, if somebody is saying that I would have been going to Yamaloka, in other words, he was sure that he was not going to Yamaloka. On the other hand, he was going to the higher planets. So this is the case with every devotee, that when one comes to the understanding that serving Krishna is to free from this material entanglement, and the devotee prays to Krishna in this way. Suriji left the world and Dhruva Maharaj was very much in sorrow, seeing what has happened to Uttama and Suriji. So he decided to go to the forest and find out who has done this. Dhruva Maharaj went to the forest and he understood that some yaksha has killed Uttama. He decided to take revenge on him straight away. It was Dhruva Maharaj what has happened to him. Dhruva Maharaj decided to take revenge in such a way that he went into the forest and he started fighting, took an army with him and started fighting with the yakshas. Not only he killed one yaksha, he killed so many yakshas. Now here also we have to think something very deeply about it. That the person who killed Dhruva Maharaj was one yaksha. Now, in retaliation, he has now decided to kill all the yakshas who are present there. Is that necessary? This is the sign of indiscrimination. that lack of discrimination has come in Dhruva's mind also. So that, in other words, what has happened to Suruchi, or what has happened to Suruchi's mind, in other words, such indiscriminate way of doing things can come to devotees also. They are also not exempted from this rule. This is what we have to remember here, that a devotee can also fall into the same trap what a non-devotee or another person who has no Krishna consciousness can do, can happen to a devotee also. In some instances it has happened, and this is exactly what has happened to Dhruva also. A person who has gone to the forest and due to the 6 months of austerities and penances has pleased Krishna, and such a person comes back and becomes so revengeful towards people who have not done any harm to him. One yaksha has killed Uttama, that is a fact. But it's not, the response should not have been to go and kill all the yakshas. So when so many yakshas were getting killed, the king of the yakshas, Vaishravana or Kubera, he became very disturbed about it. And it was then that Swayambhu Manu came to see Dhruva Maharaj. When Swayambhu Manu came there, Swayambhu Manu, you have to remember, is his grandfather. Father was Uttanavada, Uttanavada's father was Swayambhu Manu. So Swayambhu Manu came to see Dhruva, and Swayambhu Manu said to Dhruva, stop this fighting. He said to Dhruva openly, stop this fighting. Dhruva Maharaj saw his grandfather standing there. He stopped the fighting there. And the next thing Swayambhu Manu said to Dhruva is, give up this enmity. And Dhruva Maharaj left his bow and arrow there and said to Swayambhu Manu with folded hands, I have given up my enmity towards the yakshas. Now, what do we understand from this? From this, one has to understand that this enmity that comes in the heart, cannot be given up easily unless there is very, very, very strong Krishna consciousness inside. Only through Krishna consciousness it is possible to give up the enmity in this world. Otherwise, it's not possible. And when Swayambhu Manu came and spoke to Dhruva Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj was able to, he tells Swayambhu Manu, my dear grandfather, it is because there was lacking of Krishna consciousness in me that I have acted in such an indiscriminate manner. This is how he said to him, that now I realize that what I have done, I have given up my enmity. This is how he said. There is not many characters in the Srimad Bhagavatam who have done this. Basically, there are two personalities. One is Pritha Maharaj and Dhruva. What is it showing? It is showing that the Uttanavadas, that Vamsha Parambara, or in other words, that succession of the family succession, they became glorious because of this particular nature. That they were able to give up enmity like that. Today, you can see in this world how this enmity between communities, individuals, nations, and all kinds of things, it keeps growing. It never comes to an end. They're trying all sorts of methods to suppress it and to negotiate this, that, everything. Nothing works. Every time it's a disaster. It's a failure. It never works because there is no higher understanding of life. There's no understanding how the human mind is working and how these problems can be eliminated. And that is why it says in the Srimad Bhagavatam about this, that Dhruva Maharaj, when he gave up, he paid his obeisance to Swayambhu Manu and said to Swayambhu Manu, my dear grandfather, I have given up this enmity once for all. And then it was then that Swayambhu Manu said to Dhruva Maharaj, you should now go and apologize to Vaishravana, the king of the yakshas, and ask him for forgiveness. And Dhruva Maharaj did exactly the same thing. He went to Vaishravana. How many leaders in this world today have that attitude in their dealings? They are more like animals. They are actually working each other. There is no culture in their consciousness. They talk big things, but when it comes to practical life, they don't have that humility in them, nor do they have the Krishna consciousness to see that beyond all this, there is a superior energy controlling us. And Dhruva Maharaj, the emperor of the planet, is doing this. And what to talk about a king or the prime minister of a small country or a small place, he's thinking about himself so big. But Dhruva Maharaj, who ruled the planet, is saying to Swayambhu Manu, this is the difference between the kings of the Vedic time and the kings of the Kali Yuga. That Dhruva Maharaj was able to say to Swayambhu Manu, that I have given up my enmity. He went to Vaishravanam and paid his obeisances and apologized himself. Vaishravana said to Dhruva Maharaj, there is no need for an apology. After all, in your prayers you mentioned to Krishna. Vaishravana quoted that saying, that kalam, time has acted, and it is a karma, that there is function behind it. You and I cannot do anything about it. But Guru Maharaj said to Vaishravanam, the only thing I will ask you, he said to Vaishravanam, I don't ask for anything else, that please bless me, because he is the demigod, he has got that ability to give him some mercy. Please bless me one thing, that never again Krishna consciousness fade away from my heart. This was the prayer Guru made to Vaishravanam. Vaishravanam accordingly granted him that prayers, wishes, and sent Dhruva back. Dhruva came back. So, what is the difference between Suriji's and Dhruva's case now? In Suriji's case, because she was not engaged in Krishna consciousness, when she felt doing something wrong, she went and done that. But a devotee's case, although a devotee can also fall into the same situation like this, the situation is such that Krishna makes arrangement that somebody comes behind the devotee to give him the right direction. And that is why it has happened in this way. That Swayambhu came at that time to pull Dhruva into the right path, into the right direction. So a devotee, this is what Krishna's protection means. Krishna protects a devotee in this way. That when a devotee falls into difficult circumstances, externally it may appear that he is falling into difficult conditions. But if he is truly Krishna conscious, there is help from Krishna in some form at that time to guide him in the right direction. Not that Krishna is going to offer a lot of money and give him all sorts of freedom to do what he wants to do. No. Krishna makes sure that the devotee doesn't leave Krishna's association and offers that support to him in that difficult situation. So this is the difference between Suriji's departure and Dhruva's relationship with Krishna. That in Suriji's case, no help came forward. And that powerful Krishna inside, in the form of ignorance, acted. To prove this point, in the Vedic history, there is another side also to it. That in all the deity worship books, you will see that in the Shastram related to whether it is Panjanatriya Vidhi or Sarvanobhasana or the Sharadagalam, there are so many books related to deity worship. You will find there that when the deity is offered everything, all the different mantras are chanted, it is acknowledged there that knowledge and ignorance comes from Krishna. Both these two things in us are both there, and these coming from Krishna. And therefore, the mantras what they chant is also very interesting. It says, Om Jnanaya Namah, they offer the flowers to Krishna, or you are the personification of knowledge. Om Ajnanaya Namah, the next one is, you are the cause of ignorance also. That is how Krishna is worshipped. Though, because both these things are coming from Krishna. Krishna is not only one side, no. Everything is coming from Krishna. So either it is Jnanaya Namah or Ajnanaya Namah, or I don't know whether it is Ajnanaya Namah or Jnanaya Namah, but both are there, that is definite. So this is how in the deity worship also, in all the big temples, when they serve Krishna, they offer these prayers in such a way that nothing is excluded from Krishna's scope. Krishna is in control of everything. So therefore, from this we can see that Krishna is controlling us to such a degree within us, but are we aware of anything like this? We are only thinking that Krishna is standing there in the temple, I am doing what I want, and Krishna is not seeing anything, I can do what I like. And if he sees, it's alright, I mean, Krishna can't do anything about it, he's standing there. So this is our relationship with Krishna. So you can see from there that those great souls like Guru Maharaj and others, they were full conscious of Krishna's influence in this material, very material body and in their own consciousness. So eventually, that Guru Maharaj, this has happened, and Guru Maharaj happened to give up that enmity and come back, and he ruled 36,000 years this planet. 36,000 years this planet he ruled. And eventually, at the end of 36,000 years, Dhruva was prepared to go back to the to Dhruva's planet. So the departure is also very glorious for a devotee. You can see that. When great devotees, when they leave, they would have served Krishna so gloriously that when they leave this planet, they create something which they will leave behind for others to remember forever. And there is no better example than Dhruva Maharaj leaving this planet. And Vedavyasa Maharshi, when he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, he could not refrain from mentioning this. Why? Because in the third canto, when Lord Kapila told Devahuti Devi that devotional service in Pushkala Dakshinai Bhuktva Jeha Shisha Satyam Adeva Amsam Parishyasi Tato Gandhati Malstayam Sarvalo Namaskaram three more chapters to read, which I read next week, because so if there's any questions or comments.
What chapter was that you just read?
Nine.
No.
We generally, the relationship in this material world, everyone is under the modes of nature, isn't it? Who controls the modes of nature? Krishna controls the modes of nature. So sometimes we experience difficulties due to somebody whom you have not done anything to, but he still doesn't like you. What can you do? This situation often happens in this world. So this inimical feeling from somebody else, if one has to get relieved from that, Srimad Bhagavatam says that if Krishna is pleased with you, modes of nature even won't work against you. In other words, another personality who thinks against you as your enemy, although you may not have done anything inimical to him, is because that you haven't got the mercy from Krishna. That Krishna is not giving you enough mercy. That is why that you feel sometimes that somebody is your enemy. Otherwise, who is the friend and who is the enemy in this world? Every one of us are actually this enemy and friendship. These are all mental, coming from the mind. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything. It's the creation of the mind, the enmity and friendship. So, in reality, individuals are on their own. Every one of us are on our own. But we think, due to our own effect of the illusion in this world, we accept somebody as our friend, somebody as our enemy. But in reality, nobody is our friend, nobody is our enemy. In fact, the only, Prabhupada used to repeatedly say this, only friend you have in this world is Krishna. That is the real friend. Ultimately, when we leave this material world, at the time of death, leaving this world, can any of our friends help? Nobody can help. Only person can help is Krishna. So therefore, in true friendship, in true terms, it's only Krishna. All other things are based on selfishness. Selfish reasons are behind all other relationships. It's all tinged with that. The selfishness is there. Husband loves the wife because there is some sense gratification involved. Wife loves the husband for the same reason. The children relationship with the parents in the same way, to a large degree. But in the material world, that is how relationships are. So the inimical relationships also, what one feels, is coming from the mind. And that would not happen if the person is to that degree Krishna conscious. That Krishna will make sure that other people will think good about him. That you will not be able to create enemies in this material world by Krishna's mercy. It is possible. And that is why great, great devotees, they had no enemies. They always, you will see, look at Srila Prabhupada, in spite of so much preaching work done in the rest of the world, Prabhupada had no enemies. Everyone still glorifies Prabhupada. Why? Because he has no enemies. But what Prabhupada, so many people may say so many things about Krishna consciousness movement, criticize in many ways and many things. But at the end, they don't feel inimical to Prabhupada, because what Prabhupada has done to the human society is so valuable that they cannot ignore that fact, and that is Krishna. That realization will everyone to think good of others. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also, parasparanu kathanam pavanam, that talking about Krishna each other, and if one thinks mutually also in the same way, there is no question of enmity in this world. It will not happen. But enmity comes from this lower modes of nature, what is infected. And Krishna makes sure that a devotee doesn't have enemies. Devotee will never have enemies. If he is properly a devotee, he won't have enemies. That's the conclusion. Well, Suriji, when she spoke those words to Dhruva, Sudhir was very much controlled by the lower modes of nature. That's what it shows. Then Sudhirji decided that if you have excessive attachment to Uttama and the fear he had from Dhruva, that Dhruva might be to become the next king. And that fear was growing in her heart very strongly. So because of that fear, she spoke such words which she should not have spoken. Even if she had spoken to Dhruva, certain things Krishna would have tolerated. But to the extent to say to Dhruva that you should go and pray to Krishna to give birth in Suriji's womb was a little excessive thing. Krishna couldn't bear that. That was even questioning the authority of Krishna. He has gone a step further. And that's why Suriji had to accept that punishment. And Dhruva, because of his good fortune, that in fact these words of Suriji encouraged Krishna to give this mercy to Dhruva. Otherwise Dhruva didn't have much of a qualification to go back to the to have the mission of Krishna so easily in 6 months' time. But everything happened in such a way at that point that when Suriji spoke so harshly to him, Krishna felt compassion for Dhruva and decided to use Dhruva as a tool in this pastime of the Suriji. And Suriji had to take the brunt. In fact, Suriji had to pay a heavy price for it at the end. But at the same time, through the life of a devotee like Dhruva, it is showing to us that a devotee has no enemies. And devotee's consciousness is also clean. He doesn't have any, because he has a higher realization of life. Then he is not completely controlled by the material modes of nature. And Dhruva, you can see in his prayers also, he is explaining this, that when Krishna woke him up from his ignorant state of mind, when knowledge came to him, he merely realized that this material world is nothing but an illusion in which I am living. And my true knowledge has manifested in me, and I see you as the reality, everything else as false or temporary. That realization came to him. So when the knowledge develops in one, spiritual knowledge develops, one comes to that point of understanding also. This is the result of that realization that has come to him. So so if you say that why Krishna did this favor to Dhruva, the only reason for that is that Suriji has done this favor. Why speaking like this, to say to Dhruva that you go and get yourself killed and come and take birth in my womb, that was a very high-handed statement. Krishna couldn't bear that. And Krishna decided that Suriji has to go through this step.
In the past times of Maharaj, would it still happen even if Suriji didn't?
That's a hypothetical question. If it just happened like this, what would have happened? If it has happened like that, that is no irrelevance, because in this past time, this is what has happened. So we have to accept it like that, because this is history, isn't it? All this Bhagavatam, stories in the Bhagavatam is all history. And history means it is the history of the devotees. And if you can learn something from this that will help you in your spiritual life, that we should take it. We should not think that all the logic and reasoning, Krishna's actions, you can't put your logic and reasoning on Krishna's activities. You can't impose on Krishna. Whatever Krishna does, that is Krishna's desire and plan. That you have to accept that. But you will notice one thing, there is a logic in that also, that if you act in a particular way, Krishna is placed. If you act in a different way, Krishna is not placed. So that is what we learn from the devotee's life. And if you follow that footsteps, like Rama Raj and others, many others, Ramadan others, you notice that they pleased Krishna and that was their success in life. And it is also telling us, in their footsteps, all the personalities, Bhishma Devi, Kunti Devi, Prahlada, Ambarish, Gopis, all of them, by their surrender to Krishna and by their activities in this world, they showed to us, you follow us. Why didn't Bhagavatam say? Bhagavatam says, there is no decision what is right and wrong. Mahajano yena gadasa pantha. Continuously follow the footsteps of the great personalities. You will get there. You don't have to understand all the logic and reasoning behind it. You just follow them. That is what Bhagavatam says. That tarka pradishta shodayo vibhinna. There is so many arguments, so many philosophers will bring to you and tell you, I am right and he is right and somebody is wrong. All these arguments will be there. Tarka pradishta, shudayo vibhina. All the Vedic literature will tell you different things, because Vedic literature is so vast And he tells you so many arguments also will bring forward. Nasau Krishir Yasya Madhanna Bhinnam. Even among the sages, there is difference of opinion. One sage will say one thing, one will say that charity is the most important thing, another one will say tapas is more important, a third one still say jnanam is more important. Nasau Krishir Yasya Madhanna Bhinnam. Dharma Sadatvam Nihadam Guhayam. Krishna Vedavyasa Maharshi says there, the science of dharma or religious principles is very confidential. Krishna also says that in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Raja Vidya, Raja Gukhyam. It is very confidential. Why? Mahajano Yena Gadasa Pandaha. That continuously follow the path shown to us by all these great souls, Bhishma, Kudidevi, Prahlada, Gurayaj, Gopis, every Uddhava, all of them. They're showing you the path, you follow them. Don't ask them, why did you do this like this? Why did you not do that? No, the relevance to it. That is Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is like that.
This is about enemies and things. Sometimes, I don't know, say at work, you come across people who are not acting very nicely towards you. You sort of think, in these sort of circumstances, what should you do? Should you sort of think to yourself, well, this is due to my sinful activity, and it will learn to tolerate? Or do you kind of talk to them and say, look, this is not right, we should be friends, or whatever?
Talking to them may not help, because often they become worried sometimes when you talk to them. So that's obviously not the answer. The only thing you can do, that when distress comes, you have to be more closer to Krishna. Krishna can only rectify the situation. In fact, it is a fact that there are so many instances when somebody has very inimical, they will change their heart one day. And change of heart can only happen when Krishna wants that to happen. Then our dependence on Krishna, the more it increases. Because you're not so dependent on Krishna, we have taken over this this management, everything in ourselves. But because we lack that dependence in us, therefore we have this difficulty all the time. But more and more you will notice great devotees, if you look into their consciousness and their way of dealing with people, you know, this Krishna wants that to happen, it will happen. That's the way they think. In everything, in relationship to everything. So slowly, we have to develop that attitude in life. That if somebody is feeling inimical to us, you have to take it that that's what Krishna wants that to happen. That's why it has happened to me. But I am lacking, I am missing that mercy from Krishna. That is why somebody is turning against me. It's a very difficult concept for us to develop, because our nature is to retaliate quickly. As soon as somebody does something, immediately we want to react to that. That is the rajogunam coming in, because there is no satogunam in us. If there is mood of goodness in us, mood of goodness will always prevail. It will always work at the end. Mood of goodness do win. There is no doubt about it. It takes time, but at the end it will be proper win. Not the way otherwise. Today you can see many times in the Rajogunam when they have made some patch-up work between two parties, it takes hardly a few days to get the whole thing blows up. Second thing comes up. Why is it like that? Because the whole agreement has been made in the Rajogunam, and that Rajogunam will not allow you to think clearly about modes of nature. That's why Satogunam is necessary, we say. And if you are in the mood of goodness, Srimad Bhagavatam says, you will not be disturbed by others' insult or offensive nature or anything. It will not be affecting you, because you are able to transcend above the lower modes of nature. That's the understanding. So devotee's consciousness has to be always to develop this attitude, Satogunam inside. And along with this mode of goodness, all these qualities will follow one after that. And you will not find it difficult to deal with any type of people in this world. Sometimes it is also said that if you find somebody so unbearable to deal with, you should avoid the association of such a person. Because in this world, you will get all kinds of people, and you have to be very careful while dealing with them. Otherwise, you can be trapped into difficult situations as well. Because if you know that when you talk to somebody, you understand what kind of person he is. In this much conversation, you understand a person's nature. So once you understand that somebody is a little bit disturbing or dangerous to deal with, you should avoid association with such persons. This is in the early days, but For a devotee who is advanced in spiritual life, he will see that he can deal with everybody, because he will not have enemies in this world. He will not create enemies, because he is so much fixed on Krishna, and Krishna also is giving him complete support from behind. And there will be no question of any enmity building up inside. But many people used to come to Prabhupada and argue all sorts of things, all sorts of garbage they used to talk. And Kulaminam knows about it, so what all things they can talk. You'll be surprised what all they can talk. And they want to display their understanding of life and their logic and their reasoning and how qualified materially they are and what all things they have achieved in their life and how wealthy they are and how much family members they have, this, that, all sorts of rubbish they used to talk. And Prabhupada used to peacefully listen to all these things, everything. Because he knows material nature is working, what can I do about it? So he used to deal with them in that way. But at the end, some point or the other in the conversation, they will also find there is some sense what Prabhupada was talking about. They will come to their senses. But that is Krishna. That is Krishna. Krishna is from inside. He's giving that understanding to him little by little, taking time, but it comes to him. And there is something what he's saying is true. There is you can read in the conversation, there's a beautiful example of this. There's one professor, I think Alistair Hardy, he wrote a letter to Prabhupada. In that letter, Prabhupada mentioned there letter Prabhupada wrote to him first, saying that, what are the problems of human life? He wrote back saying that, long paragraphs, you can read it, it runs into many pages, he says there that pollution, environmental problems, and he has listed overpopulation. Like this, he has listed about 8 or 10, exactly like a modern, one of these modern leaders will say, every day which you are reading in the newspaper. And you should read Prabhupada's reply to that letter. And then you can see how the knowledge that comes from Krishna is different than the knowledge what has been researched and found. Prabhupada proved in every single point that whatever he has raised is completely coming from misunderstanding of things. And he answered it so nicely. After reading the letter, Alistair Hardy sent back a letter. He couldn't say one word after that. He said to Prabhupada that, what you have mentioned is true, that I did not understand this. Very, very basic things. When you think about it, things are very basic. Yeah? But it is not taught in any schools or colleges. It is just that understanding of life. The problems, what we call as problems, is not actually in real terms problems in this world. Most of the problems are created by the human species. It doesn't exist. In illusion, we work, and in illusion, we act in this way. Maya's domain, this is material world is. But Prabhupada was saying to say that when you separate from Krishna, this is our position is. This is how we fall into this Maya. And this Maya will catch you into so powerfully that you won't be able to see what is right and wrong. That is why repeatedly they say, develop this mood of goodness. And because why? When the sattva-gunam builds up inside, you can see things clearly. Māśayam ālpa bhāvasto jñāna dīvena bhāsvara. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that if the mood of goodness is there, all that what I have spoken, these 700 verses, you will understand, Krishna says. Otherwise, you are not even going to understand these 700 verses. That's what Krishna says. Māśayam ālpa bhāvasto jñāna dīvena bhāsvara. That if you have that mood of goodness, then when you read Bhagavad Gita, talking about. So that is why all this Prabhupada wrote such extensive commentary on Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. Because these two, particularly Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, this is only, Prabhupada says that in this age of Kali, because we are so much separated from spiritual life and so involved in material life, this is the only remedy, he said. This is only two books which will give you some thought, something to think about, and something in direction for you in this world. If you read the Prabhupada's foreword in the Bhagavatam, you will see there. This is very specifically he put this foreword, that Bhagavatam will show you the path in this world. Because otherwise, we will work, do things in ignorance, not knowing what's right and what's wrong. Somebody will say something, immediately will react to it, not knowing anything behind it, and more make situation worse by our own actions. And that's what's happening all the time, isn't it? So,
treatment is more goodness, to understand Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. We have given ourselves more goodness. With chanting is just faster than any other.
Chanting, yes. Chedo darpanam arjanam bhavamaha gavagdinavavanam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says this, isn't it, in the beginning. Chedo darpanam arjanam, that dirt inside will go. Bhavamaha gavagdinavavanam. That fire of material existence will quieten down. Anybody who has chanted seriously will experience that also. That you chant carefully and seriously in life for some period of time, most of the material problems will soon vanish. Because most of these problems are coming to us because of the mind. Mind is the cause behind it. And because mind is not under control, all the time we feel every problem is a big problem. But really the problem is something different than all this. The problem is that one day we have to die and leave this world. And what's our position then? That's the biggest problem. And that is what Shastra is saying, that preparing for that is the greatest thing in this world. And Vedic life, spiritual life is meant for that. Because this drama won't go very long, few years, that's finished. And all the enemies go one way, friends go another way. And we are left on our own. You have to deal with the situation. So then what is important is, the only thing that's left behind is the holy names you have chanted. That's what will help you, and that will protect you from anything else. So chanting is the process to develop that mood of goodness. And of course all the other principles associated with that.
There's a gentleman over there, he's had his hand up quite a lot.
Okay.
You said the story about the Mataji jumping into the fire and that Krishna empowered him to do so he could make it in the spiritual world. So in reference to something like that, how do you know whether it's your desire to do something? Because from what I understand, to commit suicide is very simple. So how do you know if it's your desire to do so or if Krishna is directly empowering you to do something?
When one is Krishna conscious, one will understand that what is right direction and the wrong direction. Most of the situations, normally, I'm talking about ordinarily people who have not cultivated Krishna consciousness, they react to situations based on their mind, isn't it? The mind is the one which drives them to act one way or the other. A person when is Krishna conscious, they will think before they do anything. Some things are going wrong in life all the time. You are acting, doing a lot of things, and the result that's coming out of it is also very disturbing, or it's driving you in the wrong direction. That you should be able to sense that. And majority of the cases you will notice that when things are happening like that Krishna is not pleased with my attitude in life. That is the reaction, the reason behind it. And in that, when it comes to an extreme situation, things like this happen. Like the Suriji, what Suriji did. But in normal circumstances also you can notice that the tendency to live a sinful life comes from where? It's forgetfulness of Krishna. When you forget Krishna and you want to act, enjoy independently, the desire for sense gratification builds up inside. And when the desire builds up, you are looking for the opportunities for that. So then you don't want to associate with devotees, you want to go away from their association. You are thinking, in the Bhagavatam this is explained in much more detail, where it says, Brahma when created, He says the five different kinds of ignorance has been put into our consciousness. Tamasa, Moham, Mahamoham, Tamisam, Andhramisam. The five kinds of ignorance inside. And all these five kinds of ignorance develops at different points in our life, different times in our life. Example, a young person who is going through in his teenage lifetime, Rajogunam is very predominant and it's very easy to deviate from Krishna conscious principles at that time in his life. And it is then that he needs stronger protection than any other time, a young man's life. So it is at that time, if you stay in Krishna consciousness, the possibility is that Krishna will help you to think in a clear way and to see what's right and wrong. Otherwise, it is much easier to fall into this illusion and go in the wrong direction. So the way to understand it is that when Krishna is favorable, you will notice all your activities also will be Krishna conscious. When you are not favored by Krishna, Krishna is not favoring you, you will notice also that all your activities will be not favorable for Krishna consciousness. Just like you can see that this is again the question of Satyagunam and Rajagunam. Satyagunam means all this understanding, right understanding of knowledge and everything. When Satyagunam builds up inside, automatically you want to get up in the morning early. You want to chant Hare Krishna. You want to bathe yourself and keep yourself clean. You want to avoid the association of the people who are not interested in Krishna consciousness. And there are so many things in the Bhagavatam and Vanilya, it's listed there also. So this mind, this is Krishna's favorable to you. Krishna is favorable, that's why you are able to do that. When Krishna is not favorable, you will say, oh, 10 o'clock is good enough to get up in the morning. It's too early, otherwise it's nice in the bed, comfortable. And getting a cup of tea, going to watch television and having a late night, all this is coming from things which are not favorable. That's why you have to understand at that time, Krishna is not favorable. Wrong things are coming. And the result that, in that height of activities, suddenly you may do things also which may cause serious damage in your life and otherwise. So, because the mind is uncontrolled, the mind can take you in any direction. Which way the mind will go, you never know. It can go in any direction. So unless this mind is, somebody is controlling from behind, Krishna is present in your heart as a super soul, is helping you to go in the right direction all the time. So this is the way you make that judgment, that your activities will tell you whether I am doing the right thing or not, I am staying in Krishna consciousness or not. If you're not in Krishna consciousness, you can take it that sometime or the other you will feel the pressure of Maya so much one day that you may do things which are not helpful in life. So of course when it goes to extreme like Suriji, it can happen. People are committing suicide all the time in this world, isn't it? And Krishna says, I have given you this body to come back to the spiritual world. And is there anything more foolish than that, to give up this body to kill itself without using it for the right purpose? So that's the biggest mistake what one does.
There are two chapters which epitomize what you said in that chapter 12. I don't know if you could say that there are 46 and 47 when Mother Suriji sees Dhruvamaya.
Suriji, the younger brother of Dhruvamaya, seeing that innocent boy had fallen at her feet, immediately picked him up, embracing him with her hands, and with tears of feeling she blessed him with the words, my dear boy, long may you live. He says that, and to one who has transcendental qualities due to friendly behavior with the Supreme Lord, all living entities offer honor just as water automatically flows down by nature.
That's beautiful.
Okay, stop there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.